In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc., and you.
Do you think there's any chance that when the final hour comes for you, when you're on your deathbed, you might have a second thought and suddenly get cold feet?
I tell you what, when I'm on my deathbed, I'm going to have a tape recorder switched on, because time and again, people like me are the victims of malicious stories after they're dead, people saying they had a deathbed conversion when they didn't. There's a story that even Darwin had a deathbed conversion, which is a complete lie, but it's widely believed by creationists, and it happens again and again and again. So I'm going to have witnesses, and I'm going to have a tape recorder switched on.
That, of course, is famous atheist Richard Dawkins being interviewed by Bill Maher on his show Real Time. Interesting question. He plans no deathbed conversion, and we must conclude, therefore, if he's consistent with his own materialistic worldview, that he expects nothing after death whatsoever. Is it rational to expect nothing after death? Is it a sound philosophy? Is it a serious way of looking at ourselves today that we will merely wink out of existence? And why do people believe this? We're going to talk life after death for the last half hour of this Wednesday's program. Dinesh D'Souza joins us. You can as well, 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc. That call-in number again, 1-877-623-6943. Dinesh D'Souza is co-founder and director of the Why God Institute. He served as senior policy analyst at the Reagan White House, and he's author of several books, including his latest, Life After Death, The Evidence. Dinesh, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back on the show.
You want to make the case in this book for life after death without appeal to biblical truth or revelation. Why are you taking this particular approach to the subject?
Because it's the best way to empower religious believers and challenge the atheists like Richard Dawkins. Challenge them not by throwing Bible quotations at them, which won't do any good. They're just going to turn around and say, we reject the authority of the Bible to decide the matter. But to take them on with their own weapons of reason and skepticism and science and evidence. See, I think that's the way that Christians can be more equipped to go out into secular culture. It's also a more effective way to reach the seekers and the middle of the roaders, the fence sitters in our culture, who are curious and want to know, but who won't respond necessarily to the sort of old-time biblical appeal.
Do you think that Christians have conceded too much in this sense, and that is basically saying, well, you know, the atheist says that belief in an afterlife is irrational. It's not philosophically well-grounded. It is a blind faith assertion. And Christians will say, well, I guess they're right.
Well, I think that Christians are a little intimidated by the fields of particularly modern science and particularly modern biology, because the atheists have been using evolution as a battering ram against Christianity. So some Christians will concede that territory and basically say, I have faith because I have faith. The problem with this, of course, is that these same Christians are losing their own sons and daughters who go out into the world or go off to college and come back with questions. Their own parents who are, tutored in the church and adept at citing scripture, but are not able to give historical evidence or philosophical evidence or engage these questions in a secular way.
Does the atheist have evidence for his belief that there is no life after death?
No, and this is a little bit of the craziness of a statement like Richard Dawkins. I mean, think about it this way. If you asked a Christian, how do you know there's life after death, the Christian would say, I know because of the Bible. I know because of Revelation. And the atheist will laugh and say, that's preposterous. You don't have any evidence. You haven't interviewed any dead guys. You haven't been to the other side of the curtain. You don't know. You're just guessing. And there's some validity to that. So you turn around now and say to the atheist, okay, pal, do you believe there's life after death? And the Richard Dawkins would say, no, I'm confident that there isn't, and that's why I'm willing to go to my death with the videotape on. And you say, but how do you know, Richard Dawkins? Have you interviewed any dead guys? Have you been to the other side of the curtain? What information do you have that the religious believer doesn't have? And it turns out, none at all. So the atheist position, like the believer's position, is essentially a guess in the dark. Both, in a sense, are taking a faith-based position. At least the believer is honest enough to admit it, whereas the atheist, like Richard Dawkins, is deluding himself into thinking he's taking a position based on reason, when he's not.
How do we explain what you point out early in your book is a near universal belief, regardless of time, culture, politics, you name it, regardless of these things, there is a near universal, almost default human position in favor of life after death?
The reason I call this book The Evidence is I begin with that historical fact. I begin by saying, let's look around the world. We find that people in every culture affirm life after death. In fact, the denial of life after death is confined to only one civilization, the West, and only to a small minority of people within it. But the small minority of people thinks that they're smarter because they have access to science and reason, so they are the party, if you will, of the future. But I do think it's interesting that you have this universality, because it demands explanation. The atheists try to say, well, look, we can explain it. The big theory, which was sort of invented by Sigmund Freud, or popularized by him, was wish fulfillment. In other words, that it's universally people believe in life after death because we all want to live beyond our deaths. And so we make up a better life, a wonderful life that never ends without sickness, and that's the afterlife. Now, the problem with this theory is that it does explain one part of the religious belief in the afterlife. It explains heaven. Heaven is a kind of adult Disneyland where there's no suffering and we live forever and it's all great. But what about hell? I mean, think about it. If we were sitting around to make up an invented or manufactured future, who would think of coming up with hell? That's a lot worse than facing life or even facing death. So I think that this Freudian diagnosis, which is to kind of explain away the afterlife by just saying it represents wish fulfillment, doesn't really square with what the religions of the world actually believe about life after death.
This is kind of a tricky question. Should we make anything, Dinesh, of people who claim to have, just stepped a toe over the line and then returned, near-death experiences, as they're often called?
The near-death experiences, when they first came out in the 70s, the reports, they were a little unbelievable. They seemed very anecdotal. And even though there were quite a few of them, it was a little hard to take them seriously. But then let's remember that the reason we're skeptical of all this is because our own experience is different. I mean, we haven't been on the operating table. We haven't had our hearts stop. We haven't had our brain scans read no motion and so on. So now there's 30 years of data on this. Thousands of near-death experiences from all over the world. And I think what's significant about them is their similarity, their virtual uniformity. Everybody sees the bright light. Everybody goes through the tunnel. Everybody has their life flash before them, the so-called life review. Everybody encounters a celestial being. Everybody goes through an impassable barrier and then can't sort of go through and finds that their time hasn't come and they're back on the operating table. So when you have uniformity, the atheist way of dismissing these things, you know, some atheists have written, for example, by saying, well, look, these are kind of, you know, this is the kind of dream you have when you take hallucinogenic drugs like LSD. But of course, if you give 100 people LSD, they will all have very different dreams. They will not have the same dream. And then some other atheists say, well, maybe this is just the brain in the process of breaking down, the so-called dying brain hypothesis that a psychologist named Susan Stephen Blackmore has publicized. But the problem is that, you know, when your brain is dying, and we know this from people who have Alzheimer's, whose bodies and brains are breaking down, they have very dim perceptions, faded recollections, disorientation, whereas the near-death experience is usually the most vivid experience people have had in their life. And besides, if their brains are breaking down, how come these guys are living in families, going to work, driving cars, and so on? If their brains have broken down, somehow they have reversed the process and their brains are now functioning totally fine. So the atheist explanation is a little dubious, it seems to me. And so on the balance, near-death experiences, I don't want to make too much of them, but they do suggest that consciousness might outlive death.
Well, they do leave something that the atheist needs to explain. Is that what you're saying with only about 30 seconds here?
Well, what I'm really saying is that if the atheist is correct, near-death experiences that point to an afterlife should not only be rare, they should be totally impossible. So even if one of them is valid, it's showing that some form of consciousness does survive death. It doesn't say for how long, but it is a valuable piece of empirical evidence because these people have gone right to the edge.
Dinesh D'Souza is our guest, co-founder and director of the Why God Institute. He served as senior policy analyst at the Reagan White House, and he's author of several books, including his latest, Life After Death, The Evidence. We're going to give away a copy of Life After Death to caller number 7 during this break. Call during this break, 1-877-623-MYIE. We're looking for caller number 7. They'll get a copy of Life After Death by our guest, Dinesh D'Souza. 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MYIE. Caller number 7, a copy of Life After Death, The Evidence by Dinesh D'Souza. And more with Dinesh on the other side of this break. So where do we go from here? I dabble, and that's all I ever do, dabble in a subject far deeper than I'm able to understand. Physics. It's not just forces. It's now some very metaphysical things called physics. And the more I read into this, again, from a layman's perspective, without any real understanding of it, the more I say to myself, wow, it sounds as though these men who otherwise would deny things like life after death are describing a universe in which, at least if their model of the universe is correct, maybe such a thing could even be possible. So what do we do with modern physics? And how do the atheists explain these realities that don't always square with what we can observe? Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk to Ken Ham about dinosaurs. Dinesh D'Souza is our guest. We'll be right back.
The new Issues Etc. YouTube video features Benny Hinn.
Adam was a super bee, that he had dominion over the fowls of the air, the fish of the sea, which means he used to fly. Adam not only flew, he flew to space. With one thought, he'd be on the moon.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play.
Joel Osteen.
You may have to weed through 100 negative thoughts before you come to the right sound. The voice of victory that's saying, you are blessed, you are prosperous, you can do all things, your best days are still ahead. Latch on to those thoughts.
Never heard the word impossible this time, there's no...
And Deepak Chopra.
How come you're all so convinced that God is a he and Satan is a he? How come we have these ideas that are so mythical, that are so primitive?
Check out the new Issues Etc. YouTube video at issuesetc.org and click support.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24-7, 618-223-8384.
When you hear the words new music for your congregation, do you automatically think of mindless praise music? Well, think again. Liturgy Solutions has new compositions for all seasons of the church year that are firmly grounded in the Reformation truths of Christ for us in word and sacrament. Check us out on the web at www.liturgysolutions.com. At Liturgy Solutions, we don't do worship, we're deep into liturgy. www.liturgysolutions.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dinesh D'Souza is our guest. He's co-founder and director of the Why God Institute, served as senior policy analyst at the Reagan White House, and he's authored several books, including his latest, Life After Death, The Evidence. You can purchase Life After Death under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, click on demand. Dinesh, it's been asserted that the laws of physics, the physical laws that appear to rule the universe here, there, and everywhere, would preclude something like life after death. And yet, I take it from reading one of the chapters of your book that the law book of physics has been rewritten significantly in the last about 100 years, hasn't it?
That's the key point, and this is why Christians really should find this evidence very thrilling. It's almost as if an archaeologist were to be digging in the Middle East and find evidence of Christ's crucifixion and resurrection. Christians may have long believed this on faith, but wow, isn't it great to have some corroboration from an independent source? Now, if you look at physics, if we lived 200 years ago, if someone were to ask us, do we believe as Christians in life after death, we would say yes. They would say where? And we'd say, well, it's in heaven. And heaven is outside of the universe. It's outside of time. God is eternal, so not bound by space and time. And moreover, we will live not only as souls, but we will have resurrected bodies made up of matter. They're material in some sense, but incorruptible. The bodies will last forever. So then, 200 years ago, the atheist would laugh and say, this is ridiculous because the universe is all that there is. Time and space extend indefinitely in every direction. And so how do you get outside the universe? Moreover, we know what matter is, and all matter breaks down. It perishes like bodies. And so this kind of matter that lasts forever, these material resurrected bodies that you Christians believe in, are impossible. But today, what's interesting is there has been such a radical shift in our understanding of the universe that scientists routinely now talk about different multiple dimensions. They talk about multiple universes. And the interesting thing about these multiple universes is they all have their own laws. They operate according to laws different than the laws in our universe. Scientists also routinely speak of dark matter and dark energy. And the interesting attribute of dark matter and dark energy is it is unlike any matter and energy that we know about and is in fact completely undetectable by any scientific instrument. So today, in fact, if you add up all the dark matter and dark energy in the universe, it adds up to 95% of all the matter and energy in the universe. So if the atheist today were to say, sort of Richard Dawkins style, well, it's impossible to envision a resurrected body because we know what matter is, the answer is, sorry, pal, the matter that you know about is only 5%.
What about the brain? Really, a lot of what we're talking about here in the course of this conversation, Dinesh, is kind of bumping up against the question of human consciousness. And I take it that if you're going to be strictly a materialist, you have to explain away human consciousness entirely. It cannot be something that actually exists. It's just an artifact or an illusion created by, you know, the firing of neurons or something. What do
right.
the atheists
the
do
with atheist. Todd, the modern atheist is more than denying consciousness. They've got to say that the entire repertoire of our mental lives, every thought, every feeling, every emotion, are not only our consciousness but also our free will, all these immaterial things that we experience directly with the same directness that we experience the rest of the world, that these are nothing more than the firing of neurons in our brain. But see, here's the problem with that. You can study the neurons. And modern science has been doing that now for many, many decades, and bring in the world's best neuroscientists and test them and say, okay, if my thoughts and consciousness are the product of the neurons in the brain, why don't you take a good look at the neurons, run some brain scans, and tell me what I'm thinking? the best neuroscientist in the world has absolutely no idea, and no amount of studying the neurons gives him any clue. Or if you even say to him, listen, forget about what I'm thinking, just tell me if I'm conscious or not. He can't. The only way that neuroscience can tell what you're thinking or if you're even conscious is to ask you. So the truth is, this project, with atheists always say, oh, well, the mind can be reduced to the brain, but the truth of it is they have had an extremely difficult time equating the two, because one is in the non-physical, immaterial realm, and the other is simply the physical operation of atoms and molecules.
So basically, the atheist is left in a position of, I mean, if he's consistent, he's logically refuting himself. If all thoughts, all notions, all illusions of consciousness are just really the artifact of physical interactions, that includes his thoughts, his ideas too, doesn't it?
It does, and that's a good debating point. But I think a deeper point to score against the atheist is to introduce a second possibility that the atheist's brain has not conceived of. The atheist is assuming that because the mind and the brain are correlated, they must be exactly the same. They must be the same thing. But here's an example. Think of your mind as a kind of software, and think of your brain as a hardware. So the software requires the hardware to manifest itself. In order for programs to run on the computer, you need the hardware. Certainly, if you smash the computer, the software isn't going to manifest. The software programs aren't going to run. But does it follow that the hardware is the cause of the software, or the two are identical? Of course not. In fact, the software could easily run on a different computer or run in a different instantiation altogether. So the point I'm making here is I'm introducing a second possibility that the brain is not the mind, but the brain is a kind of transmitter or receiver for the mind. And if that's the case, then the brain is kind of like a CD player. You require the CD player to hear music, but the CD player is not causing the sound waves. The sound waves are totally independent of the CD player, and in fact, if the CD player is destroyed, the sound waves can be heard on another player, they can be heard in an open-air orchestra, there are many other manifestations for that same music. So that is a way of saying that the body may die, but the immaterial part of us may live on, even though here on Earth the two go together.
Okay, what does philosophy, this is a huge question, but before our time runs out, how do the philosophers weigh in on this subject?
One thing I want to say is because this is a book, Life After Death, The Evidence, that doesn't rely on religious faith, it's a stunning confirmation of religious faith. I actually use an atheist philosopher, Schopenhauer, a thinker of incontestable greatness, who nevertheless makes an ingenious philosophical argument for life after death that has never been refuted. And the reason I rely on him is I feel this is an argument that can even appeal to a seeker, even to an agnostic. It doesn't require, in a sense, somebody to embrace the idea of God. It's sort of like saying this. It's like asking if a caterpillar can become a butterfly. The caterpillar may think that that's incredible. How can a caterpillar become a butterfly? But you don't need miracles or God. You can just look at the natural process and biologically see that there's a transition from the caterpillar to the butterfly. So similarly, life after death is a factual question that can be investigated that way. And so that's why I bring in an atheist argument, because it shows ultimately that we can, on the ground of reason alone, discover things that end up supporting faith.
So finally, with about a minute here, how would you summarize the case for life after death?
I would summarize it this way. We're sort of like detectives who have come upon a crime scene. Now, there are no eyewitnesses in the sense that we haven't interviewed dead guys, but there is a lot of evidence and there are a lot of clues. Each clue by itself is not going to make the case. But when you put the clues together, arguments from history, from psychology, from philosophy, from physics, from biology, from the brain sciences, then collectively you have an overwhelming case. It's kind of like you've established motive over here, you've got the blood evidence over here, you've got the DNA evidence over here, you put it together, the guy did it. So you're able to reconstruct, if you will, the case. And even at the end of it, we haven't proved it beyond a reasonable doubt, but we have proved it by the preponderance of the evidence. That's very good news for believers, and it's a real challenge for every seeker and every agnostic who's truly open to the evidence.
Dinesh D'Souza is co-founder and director of the Why God Institute. He served as senior policy analyst at the Reagan White House. He's author of several books, including his latest, Life After Death. the evidence. Check it out at our website, issuesetc.org. Click On Demand and look for Life After Death by Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh, thank you again.
It's been a pleasure.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Ken Ham about dinosaurs. He's got a great chapter at the end of this book that we didn't have time to get to, but I will here in the last minute we have kind of summarize it. You know, we have not interviewed dead people, but we have some very clear testimony from someone who has been dead and returned alive afterwards. I'm not talking about a near-death experience. I'm talking about a real death experience, a death that Christ experienced for each and every one of us. He didn't come near. He went over the line and he broke the line. He conquered death, swallowed it up, tasted it for everyone. And then, because death cannot hold him, he returned victorious after 3 days, alive again, never to die again. And he's not just here to tell us that there's something beyond death. He's here to take us there. Not just our souls to heaven, but just as his body has been raised from the dead, incorruptible and unable to be touched by death again, so he promises that because of his suffering of death for us, his conquering of death for us, his sacrifice on the cross, and his resurrection from the dead for us, we too will be just like him, passing through death into life, into resurrection, body and soul, all because of what Jesus has done for us. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.